And we're back here, and we're back here with Representative Amanda Price. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning, Duke, and happy almost springtime.
Yes. I look at that. It's beautiful outside, but I look at the temperature, and
not so nice. I'm being very, very positive today. It's going to be spring. It's going to be spring.
Well, we got something to celebrate. This is Reading Month.
It is. March is Reading Month, and so just take this opportunity to highlight that to you and to remind folks to read to their kids, read to their grandkids. And so I have a question for you. What was your favorite book as you were growing up? What book was your...
What was my favorite book? I read so many, but a lot of them impressed me a lot. One was Uncle Tom's Cabin. I was thinking about this morning when I saw the winning movie, and I wondered how many people had read Uncle Tom's Cabin for that slant on slavery.
Yeah.
And that was good, and I remember reading The Good Earth, too, also. I read so many of them. That hard to pick a favorite.
It is. I think my favorite overall was To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, that was a good book.
That was a good book. So.
Yeah. Well, I hope that kids continue to have some contact with books now they can, of course, with Kindle and some of these other things that they can still pull them up.
Yeah, and what I'm finding is, with the new technology, getting books on Kindle, I'm missing holding books.
Yeah.
And just turning the pages, and so I'm kind of becoming old school all over again, going back to reading books.
Well, I'm almost always having one book at least I'm reading at the moment, and I'm just going to start something called The Bully Pulpit about Theodore Roosevelt.
Ah.
And Howard Taft.
Oh, that would be really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going back, and I always read mystery books, so I'm reading a lot of Elizabeth George's mystery books, but I'm also going back and trying to read this year all the John Steinbeck books.
Oh, yes.
And so that's fun. Reading it right now, I picked up Tom Sawyer again because it's just a kind of a delightful read.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some other things here. The MEEP scores.
Yep, so that's a good transition right into third grade reading, right into MEEP scores. They came out on Friday. I was doing a little research on, there's a database that the state puts out, the most recent numbers. And so we've gone from, pertinent to third grade reading is last year's third grade reading proficiency levels were at 68.1%, and it's gone up to 70%. Overall this year. So an increase, but not what I'd like to see. So that's good news, but still needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
When 30% of our kids are not reading at that proficiency level.
There are so many other things to do.
There are
problems we have.
There are a lot of things for kids to do these days, and again, reading is the basis by which all other learning.
Everything is learned by reading.
Right, and it takes you on to the rest of your life. And there are folks that can get by with a pretty minimal level, but it does impact jobs later on in your life. And so this is really important.
Absolutely. Very, very much so. All right, we have the a call coming in, I do believe. Let's see if that is a call for us here. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Good morning again, Duke, and good morning, guest.
Good morning.
I'm very happy and aroused that you were talking about reading and, the lack of, basically, with our new generation of youth here. You had mentioned a couple books, and Duke had mentioned Uncle Tom's Cabin, the Mark Twain writings and things like that. I grew up during the 60s and early 70s, and we were taught to read and to comprehend the English language as best as we could. Now, the thing is, nowadays, our children aren't being taught to read anymore on those levels. Or I mentor some children myself within our community, and I tried to get them to read. I told them, grab any book or any subject that you'd be interested in. They didn't know where to start, because they have been pulled away from books.
Yeah.
I have in my home a huge book. It's Mark Twain's writings, a bunch of his stories. and, you know, Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, and things like that. One of the boys grabbed that book and started reading it. And I was telling him the whole time how much I enjoyed it and the way Mark Twain wrote. And this boy could not understand the English language as it was written within that book. He was confused at some of the old words and more of the slang, I guess it would be, the for English slang words. But we have a lost generation of readers within our grasp. How do we correct that? And thank you so much for bringing this subject up.
Thank you.
Well, and I would agree, as I was reading Tom Sawyer in the last few weeks, I'm saying the words out loud so I can understand, put them into context. So I understand what that young man was going through. It's a huge problem, and so we're trying to put more emphasis on it. I know from the governor's perspective, it's one of the things that's on his scorecard as a benchmark that we're going to try to put more and more emphasis on reading, especially in the elementary grades. But a lot of the schools that are having trouble right now have moved towards maybe 90 minutes of reading every single day and putting more and more emphasis on it because the kids are at that much of a deficiency. So it's really important. One of the things we're finding, too, as my third grade reading bill has more and more discussion, is that we really need to focus on teaching teachers how to teach reading. And so that will be part of the discussion as we go forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. 395-1450, our number, by the way, if you want to talk to our guest, she'd be happy to talk to you. And let's continue on the education kick here with the school safety transparency.
Yeah, this is a package of legislation. Folks may remember last year, Grand Rapids Press MLive did a series of articles about schools who didn't do a good job of holding fire drills throughout the year. And a couple incidents of schools having five fire drills in the last 5 days of school. And so this package of legislation asks for when a school does have a fire drill that they posted after they've held the fire drill on their website. But it also moves away from, it asks for five fire drills, but also asks that we hold two tornado drills, one in March, so the kids are prepared, but also move towards doing some lockdown drills too.
Yeah.
And so it would just puts greater emphasis on that the drills are supposed to be spread out through the rest of the school year, not just clumped into the last 5 days of school, and that we're moving more now towards the lockdown drills, unfortunately. It's just it's hard to say and to know that we need that.
Yeah, all right. All right, teacher evaluation. Teachers don't like to be evaluated, I don't think, do they?
I think they do. I think
they do.
I do.
A measure of how they're doing?
They do. They're very professional people, and they want to know how they're doing and how they can improve. So this is legislation. You know, a few years ago, we reformed the tenure system in Michigan. Before that, it was a system where the last person hired by the school district was going to be the first person fired by the school district based on the tenure laws that we had in place. And we reformed that, saying that teachers that they're going to be evaluated, and the highest, most effective teachers will be retained. The least effective teachers will be let go. And we've started moving towards that. This legislation, the tenure reform legislation, then asks for a committee or council on educator effectiveness to be formed. And that council made a series of recommendations to the legislature about how to do a teacher evaluation process. And that now is in a bill form, and we're taking testimony on it. And it is based on a year-long set of pilot projects that were conducted around the state. And so we're working through that. And the language is really important because we don't want to move away from the tenure reform piece and go back to any kind of other system of evaluation, but it's really exciting. It's a much longer process than I was hoping it would be. It's like, you know, if it, any employee needs to be evaluated so they know where they are.
Do teachers evaluate themselves at all?
I think probably in the evaluation process there is some mechanism to sit down with the administration and do sort of input as to in that. But I don't think it's right now or previously what was happening in teacher evaluation was that that was an item of bargaining. So in some situations, 90% of the teachers across the board were evaluated as highly effective, where that meant they weren't individually being evaluated. They were just being blanketed with this designation. And that's not helping teachers, it's not helping administrators, and certainly not helping the kids. And so we're moving away from that and into a system that you're going to be evaluated partially, and most of the serious discussion around this happens to be a piece that it indicates student performance improvement. So if the kids, through the course of that year, perform better because of this teacher, that will weigh very heavily on the teacher's evaluation.
I think if you like a teacher, you learn better from that teacher.
Yeah.
Because I know I've heard kids say, I hate that teacher. Well, maybe that's natural, I don't know, but...
Well, yeah, if the teacher's making you do some hard things, I would see that reaction. I think most administrators and most teachers will tell you they know already who the effective teachers are, the really good teachers are.
Yeah.
This is a system by which some of those mechanisms can be put in place, and we really need to move to something that's quantifiable as opposed to just objective or subjective, I guess.
Let's get to House Bill 5280. Well, we got a call here. Let's take that first. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yeah, good morning. Arlen Meekoff is head of the committee that is investigating, and there's a lawsuit involving these teachers that want to get out of the union, and they were claiming that August is the only time they can get out of the union. Amanda, do you know where that stands with that whole lawsuit? And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you.
I do not know where that stands. I think they've been having testimony for a few weeks now. I'm just reading some newsletter reports of that, and so I think that continues to go forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the House Bill 5282.
Now, this was a piece of legislation. It's just kind of unusual. So this is I sit on the Energy Committee.
Yeah.
And typically we're talking about electricity and natural gas and fracking and things like this. So this was a bill having to do with nuclear power plants. And it would ultimately allow security officers at nuclear power plants to use physical force and in some cases deadly force to deter intruders or folks who are intent on hurting the nuclear power plant. So to give you kind of a visual of this, you know, here's the nuclear power plant footprint. It has a perimeter fence around not the entire piece of property, perhaps, but the more important areas.
Right.
And what has happened in some prosecution is folks would get through that first fence and be moving towards the interior fence, and there was no recourse to arrest or prosecute those folks and also deter them from going from that exterior fence to the interior fence. And so this legislation would really allow the prosecutors to handle those folks. And in some cases, I mean, if you're really intent on harming or trespassing for illegal purposes, deadly force could be used.
Mm-hmm. Well, bombs can be made so small these days that somebody could carry one in very easily.
Yeah, and nuclear power plants are not fun places. I can remember being in elementary school, and you could go next door, I think one of the nuclear power plants in southwest Michigan, they had a visitor center, and you could come in and understand how the power plant... That doesn't happen anymore. They're highly guarded.
Uh-huh.
highly guarded, and to the point where you're not sure you want to go in there because of the the guns some of the people carry.
Yeah. Well, they got to protect us, I guess.
They do. And after 9/11, everything is everything's changed since then.
How about the energy choice?
Energy choice is we're going to start hearings on that topic in a few weeks, around March 18th, and that'll be really interesting because right now, after 2008, we have a new energy plan in Michigan that allows the utilities to have 10% of their customers opt for choice. The rest of them then are not allowed. There's a 10% cap. And so this series of hearings would really talk about that choice cap and whether or not we should move away from that. I believe the 10% choice cap has resulted in higher electric rates in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Okay. Got to take a moment out here for some weather and Holland's Hometown Forecast. It's brought to you by Hop In in downtown Fenville. Text HOP to 80373 for pizza and grinder specials. And the weather for today is mostly sunny with a high of 13. And tomorrow, snow showers possible with a high of 23. And Wednesday, snow showers possible with a high of 28. And right now we are at 2 degrees in Tulip City. Not a very hot day today, no.
No, but it's sunny.
It is sunny, and that's a plus. So if the snow is in the sun, it might melt a little snow, hopefully. All right. We're here with Amanda Price this morning, and if you have a question for her, you may call us at 395-1450. The Tax Policy Committee.
Tax policy has been really interesting in the last few weeks. We've passed a package of legislation from House members that would lower the income tax rate and from current levels, 4.25 down, and some of it has some trigger mechanisms. So if we have a budget surplus of a certain amount, it would lower it in that year. And so that's one package of bills being considered. And then very quickly soon, the bills have not come over from the Senate, but there's a large package of bills from the Senate on the personal property tax that would amend that.
I have a caller coming in here. Good morning. You're on with the guest this morning.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll call back.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. The property tax lower?
Personal property tax.
Yeah,
and this has implications for our local units of government because that's a large source of their revenue. And I think the lieutenant governor and the governor has been working on trying to come up with a place that they could get to that the local governments would be held harmless or neutral on the loss of revenue, but still amend or change that personal property tax so that it's more beneficial to businesses.
Okay.
So this is a bipartisan package. So I'm looking at the list here. I see six Republicans and four Democrats on this package. And so I think it has a lot of support, and it's already come out of the Senate and will come to our House committee, I believe, next week.
Okay. Then we have the local government.
Local government
What's that
committee.
All about?
Yeah, I chair local government in the House, and so we've been taking testimony on a couple of things recently. Most interesting, I think, is a bill from Representative Pete Lund that would allow local units of government or folks, citizens in local units of government, to make a decision as to whether or not the local unit should offer defined benefit retirement or a defined contribution. And this is prompted by some of our local units of government have defined benefit plans, which are similar to a pension, that are getting quite expensive and not well funded, and allow the option to move to a defined contribution plan, which is basically a 401 kind of a retirement plan. And so we've been hearing discussion about that. Some testimony saying that the defined benefit plan is actually, if it's well funded, less expensive for the local units of government, whereas the defined contribution, the 401k type of plan, is actually more expensive.
And I have a call here. Yes, you're online with our guest.
Yeah, good morning. I've got one comment only, and I think I stand for a lot of Americans out here. For what is going on in Washington, for what you people are allowing to go on in Washington, it disgusts me and disgusts a lot of other Americans in this country. What you're allowing this country to go to and to happen, I can't say nothing more, but it's simply disgusting. Thank you.
Well, Amanda is with the state government, not with the federal government, so...
Yeah, but thank you.
But you probably agree.
I do. It's frustrating, and I share those same sentiments. Maybe, but again, I'm a Michigan representative, and we hope we're moving Michigan forward a little bit more quickly than the federal government is moving forward.
Yes, well, government does not work speedily. It usually works from crisis to crisis, and that's the way we go.
Yeah, and I believe it was constructed in that way. It's a messy process, and
yes,
but it doesn't need to be unnecessarily messy.
Yeah, well, that's the way our forefathers planned it, and there were supposed to be three equal parts of government, and that's been kind of gone lopsided now, I guess.
Yeah. Especially recently, in a lot of the decisions or the administrative rulings or findings that the administration's been putting forth, it's
can the state in any way with resolutions have an impact on Congress?
Yeah, and we often do pass resolutions, and they get passed on to Congress. They're not binding in any way, so it's an expression of what we think needs to happen. Just last week, for instance, we passed a resolution about the hydraulic separation of Lake Michigan from the Chicago waterways
for
the Asian carp issue. And that continues to be one of the most frustrating things that the federal government has not acted on lately, because it's going to have such an impact.
It can.
Yeah. And I just wonder if people in Washington think the Great Lakes are, like Crystal Lake or some of the inland lakes, as opposed to being inland seas.
Yeah. The trouble is, in Washington, they don't seem to realize that this is a very critical thing and that speed is important.
Mm-hmm.
And as a legislator, you know that, and I think everybody in Lansing knows that.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to give you an idea, my husband and I were up on, I think, not Beaver Island, the name is escaping me, but 2 years ago, and we were hiking around the perimeter of it. Just
Manitou?
Yeah, South Manitou. And there were 10 inches of the zebra mussel shells. And we were talking to one of the park rangers there, and he said, 10 years ago, those were not there.
Hmm.
And you can see the impact to an environment, even in a short period of 10 years. And so Asian carp are just a very destructive fish, multiply, or they breed very heavily and 3 or 4 times a year. So they're going to have an impact, not so much on the Great Lakes, because they're a warmer water fish, so they'll go up to the tributaries and start impacting our lakes.
They will. They'll get all our bass and bluegills and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to say we're out of time, but it's one of those things.
Well, next time I see you, it will really be spring.
I hope so. Okay.